Ernest Dean Anderson, the great jazz and blues vocalist with All Blues. Of course, that was Miles Davis's signature tune, and Roscoe Brown put some words to it, and here it was. There was Ernest Dean Anderson vocalizing in 1983. This was recorded. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we pick up from where we left off just a couple of days ago. And if I had gone to sleep for that time and just woke up today, I would hardly recognize what world this is. It's so different. Each day is something different. And dramatically so. It's not, you know, undulating. It is not happening gracefully. It's shock and terror and blame and fighting. It's all kinds of things that we don't really need in our lives, but this is where it is. Tickled. Yeah, that's a good word. I was tickled on 2 days ago to read an editorial in the Washington Post. And the editorial said, let me just get sure I don't read you the whole thing, but I refer you to it so you can go on your own and when you have some time and read the whole thing. But it is talking, let me give you the headline. Can we stop pretending Trump is fit to be president? Can we stop pretending Trump is fit to be president? That's the editorial of the Washington Post 2 days ago. I chuckled because I said it 3.5 years ago. I was very clear that America had elected a very psychologically unstable person, an incomplete individual whose judgment is poor, who lies like a cheap rug. And miracle of miracles, he becomes the president of the United States. And 3.5 years ago, I said, what is wrong with us? What is wrong with this nation? That he seems to be a logical choice for that office. Well, what do you know? It took 3.5 years for a leading newspaper of the world, and certainly of the United States, to ask the question, to finally ask the question, can we stop pretending Trump is fit to be president? I've already said my piece. Under no circumstances should this man be president of this country, but it is one of the quirks of this country. People who don't deserve and who shouldn't be in positions of power and leadership actually are. And the people who should occupy these spaces, who truly are leaders, who have something to offer, who have prepared themselves in one way or the other for the position in terms of experience and expertise and education, they are kind of out of the loop. And make no mistake, in the current situation we're in, We have a twofer. We have Trump, and I hate to say it, but we have Biden. Now, people would say, well, that's not fair. Biden was a U.S. Senator from Delaware. He's been in politics for a long time. All these things are true. He served as Barack Obama's vice president. He served with honor. He was in the military, serving with honor. All these things are true. Nonetheless, he's far from an ideal candidate, but these are far from ideal times. And we have to deal with a choice, a very nasty choice that we have to make. Either the lesser of two evils or the evil of two lessers. Some people would say that's a real gross exaggeration, but I'm looking at it. It's not like Joe Biden is electric and exciting, and he makes you want to get out there and not just vote, but, guard the House and the Senate. He wants you to become involved. Now, what has been happening, and this is what the coronavirus has come to mean to me personally, it's a distillation. And with each distillation, it becomes more and more intolerable, even as it becomes more and more powerful. This is not what we want. This is not what we should come to know as, quote, democracy, unquote. Yes, I would admit I have an idealized version of democracy. It shouldn't have the feel of organized crime. Or extortion. Or jamming people up against a wall and ordering them in so many ways, because you leave them with no choice. There's no great choice here. You either pick this one or you pick that one. Choose your poison. It's not like we don't have qualified people. We just seem not to be able to tolerate them or to invite them in. We don't seem to want to hear what they have to say. For example, Andrew Yang, businessman, tech person, who financed his own way into the primary process and then found that he couldn't make it. And it's not because he wasn't well financed and he didn't have the money and it's I think he got fed up and frustrated because people like him pose a unique kind of threat. They bring new energy and new ideas, and we will not have it. No new ideas around here. Riff on what we know. And what we know is the same old, same old. He has an idea, for example, that the United States should seriously consider a 4-day work week, leaving 3 days for family time and for self-development. Very different. And yet you can see how people should want to embrace an idea like that. But he is no longer in the field of candidates, and nobody wants to grab him by the scruff of his neck and force him to share these ideas with us, whether he's running or not. But you can see right away a whole different way of thinking. It's not like the society as a whole has not progressed to the point where we need to work 5 days a week, and in some cases, even more than that. Supposedly, we have the advantage and benefit of technological advances that should make our work easier. Is it? No. So here he is, broaching an idea, throwing it out for people to consider, and which should actually be a serious consideration. What would be the benefit? First of all, you have people who will be able to lead fuller lives, enjoy their families, be less stressed. They have more time to enjoy their children, even their dog. They may be more productive. And we still are not abandoning the role of mechanization and technology. It's supposed, these things are supposed to make our lives simpler. But that's the argument they started making 40 years ago. And it still hasn't come to fruition in one of the most advanced, allegedly, countries in the world. So, despite that, we have these innovations, we introduced them. They are available to us to make our lives simpler, more productive, happier, more stress-free. For 40 years at least, in the last 40 years, very few workers have come to know this kind of America. And it's not because it can't happen. It is because those in power will not see it happen. We're maintaining the status, which remains very much quo. That's what we like. So imagine how pleased I was to see the Washington Post actually raise the question. Can we stop pretending Trump is fit to be president? Wow. It shocked me that they actually came out and asked the question. But it also shocked me more than 3.5 years ago that nobody else was asking it. Nobody saw fit to explore this question and to, since back then, begin to do something about it. They let it slide. As a nation, we ignored it because how dare we question the mental stability of a president of the United States? Unheard of. We can't do that. China will laugh at us. Japan would laugh at us. The whole world would be laughing at us. Yet it remains a salient question, doesn't it? That was my point. The first thing I said, there's something wrong with this guy. And we should stop and find out what it is. Lo and behold, a group of psychiatrists and psychologists produced a comprehensive report. And from their professional point of view, they came to the same conclusion. This man is not fit to be president. Certainly not without a couple of decades of deep counseling. But as is, he has no business being even near the White House, let alone in it. And the whole country, like as if our minds were sucked out of our brains. People think they're the same thing, but they're not. We towed the line. We doubted ourselves. We said, well, maybe this guy possesses skills and information and methods that we don't know. We have to give him a chance. We kept seeing the aberrations in his conduct. We kept seeing evidence of mass underpreparedness, massive, unable to do a job at a particular level because he simply does not have it. And because he underperforms, he chooses people very much like himself, so he's not outpaced. They're all underperformers. And we reached this point. I mean, it was hysterically funny to see what the big surprise is. The big argument now is, how dare he not wear a mask? This is what is troubling you? Look, everybody's wearing a mask and Trump isn't. Well, and what is the problem? Isn't that perfectly matched with his mentality or lack thereof? Isn't it yet another expression of Trump behaving like the surly little kid who just won't eat his veggies? You can't make him. This is what we got. And we'll see if people are clear-minded enough to want to change it. Because they like him. He's crass, he's crude, but he says what he wants to say. Yes, that you gotta give him points. He lies like a cheap rug. But he's telling you exactly what is on his mind. He gets points. He's blown the national treasury on things he and his inner clique want to do and have. But he's not wasting any money. He's spending money appropriately. He's not being irresponsible. Although there's a long string of bankruptcies in his past. And even in his present. But we're not seeing this. We decided we are not going to see it. This is our president, and we got to stand by our man. Well, y'all can stand by him if you want. But I just want to repeat for the record, I spotted this one 3.5 years ago. And I'm not even a psychiatrist or a psychologist. I'm just paying attention to the signals that we're getting. This man is very unstable, and we cannot trust him from day to day. Well, there you are. So, can we stop pretending Trump is fit to be president? What exactly does the Washington Post expect that people should do? In fact, in asking the question that way, they throw the responsibility of rehabilitation of Donald Trump back on us. It is we who are delusional, says in so many words the Washington Post. We are the ones who are delusional. We have been pretending. And isn't it time that we stop it? This is the way they pose the editorial question. It is not so much that he is defective. It is that we are defective and we permitted and continue to permit his defective actions and ways of thinking. Disagree. I disagree. The psychiatrists and psychologists aren't defective in their thinking. I was not defective in my thinking, just very pointed and taking all my cues. I didn't have to read any books about Donald Trump and what this author said or what that author said. Just paying attention to how this man moves in the world, how he thinks, how he acts, how he behaves, what's important to him. Up to last week, I commented how odd it was. Here you have the president of a country with the highest numbers in the world of coronavirus deaths and of coronavirus diagnoses. He doesn't pause. He has no comfort to offer. He's dead inside. Close to 100,000 Americans dead. He can't muster up a word of comfort to let you know at least he's aware that close to 100,000 of his fellow citizens no longer are here. They've been wiped out. But he's attacking this country and attacking that country and being his typical self. And people are embarrassed. They're ashamed. How could this man act this way? Well, he's been this way for a long time. You haven't been paying attention. And now that you sort of are paying attention, there's nothing you could do about it. At the very least, you have to wait to see what happens in the general election, whether he gets the boot or whether he hunkers down even deeper in the White House. What a fix to be in! What a horrible fix to be in! We don't deserve this. And then coming up is an election with two non-starters. We have Donald Trump. We have Joe Biden. And we're supposed to convince ourselves, as I said, choose the lesser of two evils or choose the evil of two lessers. Take your pick. Nobody's mentioning the legal cloud over Biden's head. It's not being discussed. The matter of whether he sexually assaulted a congressional staffer back in 1993. But so many things are irregular about this. Her complaint cannot be located. Documents cannot be found. And so Biden himself opens the gates. But here's what he does, very, very slick. He says in a very conciliatory way, you believe what you want to believe, but you should know that I didn't do this. And the young woman herself is to be questioned because of her past. So he's giving us a denial, and he's razzing this woman at the same time. And he still wants us to believe that he's a gentleman. Is this interesting how they work this stuff up? And now he is playing, as of yesterday, he and his wife, Jill, are placing a large wreath in honor of soldiers who gave their lives for this country. So he is self-rehabilitating at the moment. He's got Barack Obama waiting in the wings. He's got people like, members of Congress, the Speaker of the House, saying that there's no way he could have done this. Where's the proof? What do you know that the rest of us don't know? So we are trudging along, we dealing with one unstable person who is an inveterate liar. And we're dealing with a set of circumstances as regards the other that basically compels us to consider denying what might be the truth. In order to be fair to him, we must be unfair to her. But it is not about being fair or unfair. It is about the truth. What is the truth of the matter? I've said many times that, things that are so easily solved, these things are not complicated at all. Put her on trial and put the case on trial. Put Biden on trial. We'll soon come to a reasonable and logical conclusion. We don't have to beat our heads in and become frustrated because we can't figure it out. Well, that's what courts are for. Bring the case to court. But documents are missing now. The documents that would have expunged her cannot be found. And of course, we can reason that so much time has gone by, we don't know what became of those documents. So the fair thing to do would be as a couple of women have already said, I believe Joe Biden. It now becomes a matter of women affirming their truth, what they perceive to be their truth, which they know nothing of about Joe Biden. So women are literally corrupting themselves in order to protect Joe Biden. That shouldn't be allowed. That's not fair. Why do women have to, spread out in a kind of protective shield around him? Now, let him face the fire. Bring the case to trial. But not everybody has the guts for this kind of thing. And besides which, time is a wasting. We have only 6 months to go before the general election, and you don't need these kinds of complications right now, since the Democratic Party has decided, and it decided a long time ago, as I've discussed with you, that Joe Biden was going to be their candidate. They were so sure of it. Now they cannot let justice get in the way. They put him there as the candidate. How are they now going to undo that by bringing this thing to trial? That is a lost cause. Forget it. Well, I'm going to take a break now. And when I come back, or when we come back, I really want to know whether you are conscious of your choices and your thinking changing in the last couple of weeks or months, in whatever ways that you are sensitive to it. And does it concern you? That you're not sure of the conclusions you have come to in making political choices. 888-874-4888. You're going to hear a little bit more from Ernestine Anderson. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm your Trice Lead. And we're talking about the quagmires we find ourselves in this weekend after the great weekend. We're talking about where are we in the scheme of things? Everything seems to be happening at the same time, and we're not sure where we stand. We're not sure about what we're supposed to be thinking and doing at this time. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I really appreciate your frank opinions, and I don't want you to feel that you have to, tiptoe around to get said what you need to get said. Joe from Florida, you're going to start us off today.
Yeah, good morning.
Hello.
How are you? I was at a meeting one time before he was president with Trump, and to make a long story short, I'm sure you got other callers that want to get in. I saw how he operated. He had no interest in what anybody else had to say, and he slithered out of the room halfway through the meeting. So I knew what I
He
was
says,
voting for,
who
and
are
I
you
voted
talking about, though? Joe Biden or Donald Trump?
Donald Trump.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Okay,
You
no, I
made
don't
it
know
clear,
anything
so
about
that's
Joe.
good.
Okay, so I'm well aware of, well, I mean, based on that one incident, I concluded that this guy is not interested in anybody else. But I voted for him. And just as most of the other people, and I mean the vast majority, maybe 19 out of 20 or 99 out of 100 who I know who voted for Trump voted against Hillary Clinton as what I did. Yeah, so I didn't vote for Trump. I voted against Hillary Clinton, and to do that, I voted for Trump. And that's the way most
of the people. That might make you feel better, but in fact, you voted for Trump. It's not that
I'm sorry?
You voted against Hillary.
Yes,
you could just have opted out, or you could have voted for another candidate. You could have
voted for Bernie Sanders.
You could have voted for people running for the Working Families Party.
That's true. I could have done a lot of things, but I didn't. I could have bought gold at $40 an ounce, but I didn't, you know? And I didn't think that Trump was going to be as bad as he is. But may I ask you something? I would rather hear about talk about Harold Dillard, who you probably don't know who he is, and Nicholas Johnson. Do you know that name?
No, I don't.
It's not a test. I'm not putting you on. Nicholas Johnson was the valedictorian of Princeton this year, and he was the first.
Yes. I have a very strong opinion about that. Okay.
Oh, really? Well, I'd like to hear it. And but nevertheless, but he was he brought up a question that he's from his parents are from some of the islands, and I think you are too.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And he has lived in Canada, and he graduated from Princeton, and that's fine. But I think that he should. Apparently, you have a different opinion, but I'm very happy that happened. He's the first black guy since the beginning of the school that was a valedictorian, and I think he's something that we all should look up to. Okay, I don't want to take more
of
your time.
Thank you for calling and giving us your thoughts. I had remarked about this, the advent or the recurring theme of the exceptional Negro. I'm not trying to say that there isn't reason to be proud. There's reason to be proud of anybody who is valedictorian. But you see, I had a whole different reference point on this when I talked about it. We're supposed to feel very special because it pertains to the group achievement, the notion of group achievement through this one person. And that is a direct outgrowth of a racist society. Because what we're really saying is we acknowledge the fact that one of us has broken through and therefore stands to represent the rest of us. My reference point with regard to Princeton was the fact that Princeton was built by slaves, enslaved people whose labor was stolen. And just the same, they built magnificent structures. It is never conjoined with the exceptionalism that people conveniently point to today. The children of the people who built the university and the people themselves who built the university could not go to the university. Isn't that something? That is what we should be lamenting, that our society was so screwed up that enslaved Africans, their labor stolen, literally provided the wherewithal for an emerging class of superior people. That is the true history of Princeton University. Hundreds of years had passed, and that recognition and the sense that Princeton as a, one of the elite schools never really acknowledged us publicly. The very design of the school, the maintenance of the school, all of this was done with slave labor. And this young man, whether he comes from the Caribbean or not, benefited. It took how many hundreds of years for him to benefit from the labor of his people in building a leading university of the world from which his own people were banned. That's the irony of things. I commented about that. Thanks, Joe, for your call. Ed from New York, you're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon, Utrice. How are you?
Okay, Ed, you and your thumbs, how are they doing?
We're still hanging. We're still hanging, my darling. We're still hanging. Before I get back to the point you were discussing, I totally agree with you. And Princeton isn't the only historic institution of higher learning that was built by slaves. Harvard, Yale, they all have dark histories. And that's the thing that never gets taken into account, no matter who graduates from them. The irony, which brings me to my second point. The question isn't whether Trump should be president or whether Biden or the choice of the lesser of two evils or the evil of two lessers. The question in my mind, which is paramount to me now, which I've brought to many people that I've discussed things with, especially over this weekend, friends and family, is how long are we going to accept a system that brings us these detrimentally, excuse my language, poor choices? How long are we going to accept the atrocity and the lunacy of this system? We have an absolute raving lunatic in the White House, and we have a lecherous man who I believe honestly is suffering from Alzheimer's opposing him. And these are the two best choices you got. It's with what has gone on with this pandemic, with what has gone on in the past, with what we have been faced with, I think it's time that enough's enough. And the best thing you can do now is vote down ballot. That's what I'm going to do. Look for local people running for office that are akin to my needs and my wants and my platform, and forego the top of the ticket. Because both of these men, both of these parties, offer me nothing. It's time to get
but
rid
isn't
of
that. People. Isn't that the easy way out? Aren't we required to do something more than just voting down ballot? We have to articulate these things that you're talking about. We have to make them real points of debate in public. Well, and we have to let our communities know that this is not our standard.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, but it's a process and it's going to take time. The price of democracy is eternal vigilance, and we haven't been vigilant. We haven't been vigilant for many years, and we're caught with the result of entire complacency, to where actual lives have been lost due to the incompetence of the system that we allow to manifest itself. And that's what's got to be pointed. That's what's got to be pointed out. That's what's got to be agitated. That's what's got to be taught. It's time for this system to go, because this system is incapable of producing competent people to run this country. It doesn't have it in it.
We've been asking the question for so many years now, decades now. What will replace it?
Well, I believe in socialism. I'm not a Marxist, but I believe that there is a viable path for a true socialist government. There are examples, smaller countries like Germany, Switzerland, some countries on the continent. I mean, it's going to take a large effort. It's going to take education. It's going to take participation by the general populace at large. But, I mean, if not that, then what? You know, we don't have much.
I'm asking the question. I'm very clear. I'm very clear about what we need to do because I've done it. I refuse to vote. I refuse to vote in elections where the choices were no choices at all for people like me. Mm-hmm. And I refuse to compromise and say, well, okay, Fred over here is really, he's bad, but he's not as bad as, you know, Roger over here. That does not sound to me like a good way to make a choice.
No,
in
I
this
agree.
Round of candidates, when they were getting up, I don't know if you recall, but I said, I'm impressed with Andrew Yang. Fresh, new ideas,
mm-hmm.
brave, and worth listening to. And mm-hmm. if the others have other things to listen to, then let's have conversations about it. But we get the same old standard approach of we got the one Democratic candidate that, you know, the House Speaker likes, and that's the candidate. That's not my idea of exciting.
Well, it's what we accept. It's what we allow them to do. I mean, the bottom line is they're public servants. They serve at our leisure. And until we let them know that, they're going to do whatever they want to do. The money interests control politics, and the people have let their voice become absent. And you got to agitate, you got to demonstrate, you got to down ballot voting is something that I see is doing because I still want to exercise the franchise, but like you, I can't be faced with such a pathetic choice. So I vote down ballot. I try to find local officials that are in my interest, that are doing things locally to improve my community and to improve my life and still exercise the franchise. But the top of the ticket, I ignore because I can't vote for any of these people. I mean, you know, you have
I had advanced an idea that what we really need to do, those of us who are disenchanted and disaffected, is turn toward the only salvation I see, which is building and rebuilding community. Mm-hmm. That fixes a lot. It consolidates your power. It brings people together on common ground. And you do things for yourself. You reclaim your power.
Mm-hmm.
And the power is direct. It's not diffused. It's direct. So we have to look into this a bit more about how do we reclaim our communities. I was reading the other day that many of the Native American communities are doing exactly that. They're returning to their old ways of life because in those old ways of life, so much is reaffirmed. And they get so much power back. So that's where they're looking. Mm-hmm. But I think we have to do something like that. Return to a position that we must affirm the rights of our communities, the communities that we come from, and see to their needs, because their needs are our needs. And that's what we need to do. We haven't gained very much from being Democrats or Republicans or independents or progressives. We haven't. So we have to look for something else.
This is true. This is true. All politics begin locally. I've always believed that. I'm a firm believer in that. All politics is local. And if you can take care of your local environment, if you can take care of your own section of the universe, then other things have a tendency of falling into place. And there are historic communities around New York City that you can see that no matter what happens on the outside, as far as the economy, as far as politically, as far as medically, those communities consolidate and take care of their own. And
exactly.
And it's something to reach for.
Thank you. I agree.
Thank you.
Thank you. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
I've listened to some of this discussion. I was called away for a while. But what's coming across to me now, and I think is very important, is that people have to get it that this nation was designed by those who broke away not to benefit the population, but to benefit the ruling class. So we may think that Biden and Trump are, very bad people that shouldn't certainly be in office. But the point is that how this place works is that it is working in the interests of the small oligarchy and the plutocracy we have, and not the democracy. So you have to keep, being redundant and explain that to people that expectations of having a so-called good president and whatnot on a system that is dominated by oligarchy who wants to keep a plutocracy in effect is ridiculous, because that's not the reason that this country is functioning. It is in the interest of those who rule to keep the people ignorant. And that's what it does every day, because it controls all the levers that control the people, such as schooling and education and media and all those things. So I know I've said some of these things before, but we have to keep getting back to it, that the system we have is designed to do exactly what it is doing, which is enrich the few at the expense of the men, at the expense of the many. So we got to get that through our head first. And what I've said many times before is the people have no party. There's no way that you can reform the Republicans or the Democrats. People have no party, and those who rule are doing a fantastic job of having the people's attention taken away from what they should be thinking about, and rather staying in the goings and comings of the Democrat and Republican of the one-party state that we have.
So let me ask you, David, what has your journey on this question been?
My journey has been this way. I went to the schools here, and I never, for example, have the teacher that looked like me from elementary school through college. And my journey was to educate myself after I got out of school. Most of my education happened after I graduated from schools, from kindergarten through graduate school, from great professors that I found and books that I read. So everyone who wants to be really educated and find out how things are going, how things really work, and wants to do good for himself in terms of truly educating yourself, you have to do it on your own. You have to do a 411 maneuver for yourself so that you find out how things really work. But the ruling class is very successful in confusing the people, and this is what's going on today, because this is ridiculous. And most people don't get it. They're so damaged by the system of schooling and education and media that they don't even understand what's going on today. So that's what you got to do. And everybody's got to do that. And you can't keep voting for the lesser of so-called two evils. That'll get you nowhere. And that's what's going on now. So people have to start educating
themselves, studying, reading, and listening to things that help them figure out what is going on in the country. So you can't get the New York Times and think you can get the truth in that, because they're nothing but the public relations part of the U.S. government for the most part. So that's what I say. People have to educate themselves. I like some of the things that have been said about dealing with your local community. And
oh, did we lose him? Oh, I'm sorry, David, but we lost you. And that brings us to the end of our program today. I thank you all for calling in. Let's redo this tomorrow. By that I mean, let's gather together and continue our discussions, because this is how we educate ourselves. We exchange information and we enlighten ourselves, and we become more and more aware of ways in which we can change our destiny by changing our communities. See you tomorrow. Thanks.